Okay, this is KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. It is broadcast number 608, August the 1st, 1983. August the 1st. Watch this one fly very fast. A year ago, August the 2nd, they were on a different evening last year. August the 2nd, a year ago, 556, I'll go over just briefly what we were talking about to see how the news has changed in this particular time period. I was saying watch the coups, the military coups at William Casey and the CIA, and that Ronald Nazi Reagan would move into. They were messing around in Iraq, in Chad. There was a change of government in Bolivia, and that turned out to be a big change because the government changed July 22, 1982, and by the end of the year in December, Klaus Barbie, the head of the Gestapo in France, was brought into jail, released, and then flown to Paris, where he is in the jail where he tortured and killed other prisoners with his own hand. There was a shakeup in Panama with the Panama president, and now, a year later, we are ready to go into Nicaragua and make it safe for the Somoza family again and to put down the rebels in El Salvador. And we are putting up a strong military might to make sure that we will be ready to invade Cuba as soon as possible. As a matter of fact, there was a protest of the Cuban government because the guards were wearing T-shirts about Cuba, yes, Castro, no, the American army. I was talking about the dummy fronts in down in Panama, the money that involves Jonestown, and also the Vatican banks, the tangled money. And then under the category of high society, I referred to Betsy Bloomingdale, who was sued by her husband's lover, and we'll update more of that next week. I'm going to get back to that and not do anything on that this week except one story. Edwin Wilson, the Newsweek story about him and his attorney, Mr. Faringer, F-A-H-R-I-N-G-E-R, who represents Klaus Barbie and Gene Harris, all three of them CIA intelligence operations. The Bohemian Grove was meeting for several weeks. I referred to it last week. And a man, Maru Kanani, K-A-N-A-N-I, who formerly worked for the CIA and Idi Amin, was providing sex for the annual conference, which then translated as blackmail of those people attending Bohemian Grove. Those are the thousands of acres where the powers that be romp in the woods with their tutus every summer and put on their little shows where they burn care as if they don't burn it all during the year. And I talked about the Wall Street Journal article last year in July, the front page story, finally the front page, Vatican and United States banks are missing millions. It's been going on since 1975. I was waiting for Wall Street Journal to cover that, and we'll update this tonight, 1 year later. And it goes into Pope John Paul II and his deals and the rising turmoil and the budget problems of the Pope and the missing money, the Vatican scandals. The LA Times had a front page story, July 29, 1982, Banking scandal jolts the Vatican. Repercussions on European loan system feared. Well, we'll get into the Vatican in about 1 minute because the tangled web of the Vatican is getting much, much more clear. Now, I'm going just quickly through some articles that are important this week before I get on to what I consider the story, but I'm going to give you the story first because everything else fits together and makes sense. It's like my doing research for 18 years, and then learning about the Sovereign Military Order of Malta and the American military and CIA are united by the Vatican, and finally the pieces fell together. Well, this week, some more pieces fell together when I learned that the money that John DeLorean gave to buy his cocaine came from Klaus Barbie, the Nazi Gestapo head down in Bolivia. I asked on a program in February, where did John DeLorean get his money? The $20 million for the cocaine that he was fondling in his hands and the $60 million that he was going to put into Thailand, Southeast Asia heroin. Well, Klaus Barbie was getting him the $60 million from Thailand to Bolivia, and that is the big story, and the rest then all fits into power. The complete Odessa network, John DeLorean, 20th Century Fox, Henry Kissinger, the drug dealers, the CIA, and the Nazi. And what I did for the sheet that accompanies this broadcast was to do a diagram like I did last week. And many of you sent for those. I have a pile of mail to answer. I apologize. I'll get to it hopefully this week. And I drew a diagram of the connecting links of these characters that I have mentioned week after week so that it'll be more clear for you and get into the DeLorean story and his role with Klaus Barbie, the CIA, and the International Network, going right to the Vatican Bank and the problems they're in. A year ago, they were bleeding and in trouble. Today, they're really hurting, and they're trying their best to cover it up. Now, a few quick stories. One, August the 1st, today, that came out of London. Major cities accused of using slaves. The envoys for various countries use slaves, and they're trying to break the habit of taking people. You know how many people are missing around the world, and young men and women. The Anti-Slavery Society is saying that diplomats in major Western cities import their own slaves. This isn't the Soviet Union. These are the Western worlds. And they said they're in New York, Washington, London, and Geneva. They have slaves. They are moved around in private aircraft. They bring in hordes of young people as chattels, as part of their baggage. The Middle East bring them into their home. They use them as servants. The slaves are as in diplomatic agencies in all foreign major foreign capitals, and many of them are sexually abused. The women and the men are sexually abused. The slaves that come from the great country of Nicaragua that we're putting, maybe, was it 30 or 40 million in this last peak week? I have the statistics. I can't keep track of the money to Costa Rica, Panama, Nicaragua, El Salvador, and Guatemala. I'll have to keep it on a chart. But Anastasia Somoza, when he was the dictator there, he had a 3x3-inch brand that he put on each shoulder so they knew who his slaves were. And every slave in his household was branded so that if they escaped, they would be recaptured. Now, that's the democracy that Ronald Reagan is heavily funding to put back into power in Nicaragua to get the Somoza family in and round up all the people with the the slaves of Nicaragua. Another story in the paper this week, in Latin America, Kissinger showed very little interest. This is from the San Francisco Examiner, and it's a story of a few remarks of Henry Kissinger. It says, and many of you read it, 2,700 pages of his book, there's not a word about Central America. It's an indication of how little Kissinger cared or what he thought of the world south of the Rio Grande. He once said, and this is interesting, in his years in power during 1969 and 1976, he was quoted as saying that Latin America is a dagger pointing at the heart of Antarctica. Now, if you think of Antarctica as the home of the Nazi refuge and what is going on there with UFOs and secret weapons, Henry Kissinger, the German, is saying that all that the South America is a point pointing at the heart of Antarctica, as if that's the lifeline, and it will be. There's a boat leaving just tomorrow to see, in quotes, oil in Antarctica. That oil's been there for, I don't know how many years they've known about that, since around 1890 and certainly 1900. He also asked his students at Harvard what would happen if Latin America sank in the sea. And the correct answer at the University of Harvard, it wouldn't have any effect. That is Henry Kissinger, appointed by Ronald Reagan for his committee. Now, the members of Reagan's bipartisan panel on Central America, I could do a whole hour on. Nicholas Brady is from Dylan Reed. They combined as part of Bechtel for a while. Nicholas Brady took Senator Williams' place in New Jersey. He's active in Georgia. He's from Yale and Harvard Business School. Henry Cisneros, Cisneros, Harvard Graduate School of Public Administration, similar to Henry Kissinger. It has no biography. He held local and federal appointed positions, which means that all of his life he had to be with the CIA or Defense Department. William Clemens Jr., you know him, the governor, the multimillionaire oil driller from Texas who's close to George Bush and the Hinckley family. He's on that committee. Carlos F. Diaz Alejandro, A-L-E-J, the J is silent, Alejandro, A-L-E-J-A-N-D-R-O, from the Council of Foreign Relations, consultant to the Rockefeller Foundation, born in Havana, wait till he gets back to Cuba, went to MIT. The Joseph Kirkland, Joseph Lane Kirkland of AFL-CIO, works Mr. Lovestone, Jay Lovestone, and Mr. Brown, and he's the one who brought Lucky Luciano and the Mafia to Marseille and France and Italy to break open the labor unions and make them safe for Nazi war criminals, and heavily funded and was responsible for the $50 million that the Pope gave to Lech Walesa and the troubles there. This is such a stacked commission. Of course, Gene Kirkpatrick and Potter Stewart from the Supreme Court, he's on this bipartisan committee, and then he's been put on another one. He must be invaluable. He's appointed twice. That's just a little bit of that committee. As I say, each one of them has a biography. They ask the question, why are you, somebody in the news asks the question, why are you having this panel with Henry Kissinger when he's made up his mind what he's going to do with Central America? Well, that's so redundant and silly. It's like having a Warren Commission when the President of the United States and the FBI said Lee Harvey Oswald did it alone, but we'll spend 9 months and we'll see 552 witnesses and we'll take thousands of documents of exhibits and we'll kill time. But we know from the start that Lee Harvey Oswald was the loner. So then the rest of the time they have to spend covering up the points or evidence that would contradict the conclusion when they started. Maureen Reagan was on Entertainment this week. I don't know if you watched or not, July 27th. And she was talking about Dorothy Kilgallen. I mentioned her last week and her friendship with Jane Mansfield and how Dorothy Kilgallen was murdered after an interview with Jack Ruby. It was interesting to hear Maureen Reagan talking about the last interview she had was with Jack Ruby. And she said she had a major story. And then Maureen Reagan said, what did Ruby tell her? We don't know. She was a pioneer in her field. That's the president's daughter maybe getting back at Ronnie by bringing up a little matter of the Kennedy assassination and the trial of Jack Ruby and the murder of Dorothy Kilgallen. And then on Entertainment again Sunday night, Larry Hagman was on, and they asked him, what does the city of Dallas in Texas think of your TV series? And I got this from a listener who picked up that show, and he said, they like us because we don't show what really goes on there. He says, we've taken the people's attention off from the connections to the assassination of the Kennedy thing. And I thought that was pretty nice to keep this going, keep the idea going, and spread it around. The Atlantic Monthly has an article. It's by Seymour Hersh, who wrote the book on Henry Kissinger. I just picked up the article this week, but you've seen reports in the newspaper how Nixon threatened Gerald Ford on the pardon that if he gave him, if he gave him the presidency of the United States, he'd resign if Gerald Ford would promise to pardon Richard Nixon of all his crimes. And, of course, we needed Gerald Ford because when Watergate was coming unglued, all of the people involved, Mr. Sturgis and Martinez and E. Howard Hunt and James McCord, all of them were involved in some way, if not in the murder of Kennedy and the cover-up, but many in the military, in the CIA, with the U2 program and all of the linking parts of the anti-Castro Cuban connections. Edwin Wilson was a paymaster for that, and Howard Hunt was. Wilson's name didn't surface at the time, but if they pursued it, it would have gone to Theodore Shackley and Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple and George Corkla. So they all pitched together and said, okay, Nixon, you don't have to be served for any crime. And old Jerry from the Warren Commission and the CIA was made President of the United States. Now, July 23rd, in the Houston Post, there was a story that drugs were aboard in 491 plane crashes in the past 2 years. From 1980 to 1982, do you know that there were 491 plane crashes in which narcotics were on those planes? Have you added up how many planes crashed? This doesn't mean every plane. This means of the 491 had narcotics on them. And this came out at a hearing of the Subcommittee on Aviation. The U.S. Customs said they had took off these planes 1.3 million pounds of drugs, including cocaine, heroin, marijuana, 1980 to 1982. And they want to make a penalty, 5 years in prison, $25,000 fine for the pilots convicted of illegally transporting drugs without a certificate. Did you see this week in Arizona that you have to sign or register to deal in illegal narcotics? And it's against the law. It's a federal crime to have narcotics, but you have to register to deal them. Now they want a certificate for the pilot who brings them in. Otherwise, he can't bring them in, and they're not supposed to be in the first place. So they say there'll be a fine for the pilot illegally transporting drugs without a certificate. So he can bring illegal drugs if he has a certificate. You figure that one out. That means that a few people with certificates won't get arrested, and then nobody else can bring in drugs. So the monopoly of the drugs will go to a handful of people and pilots, and nobody else would be able to bring in the drugs because they'll say, where's your certificate? Oh, you work for DeLorean, you work for Hedrick. Okay, go on through. Now, another article about Vicky Morgan, the only one I'm going to bring up this evening, from the Houston Post, July 27th. And it says that Vicky Morgan started taping her telephone calls as soon as she sued Mr. Bloomingdale. I guess she got a little smart at that point. And on these tapes, it involved illegal financial deals with Bloomingdale. Now, the illegal financial deals may have rubbed off now. You see, I'm going to go extensively in the next few weeks into Johnny Carson, John DeLorean, and the bank that collapsed. Just today on the news, they said that the hearing of the Johnny Carson bank cannot be thrown out. The judge said it can't be thrown out. He's going to take it to court. And Johnny Carson and Alfred Bloomingdale and Ronald Reagan and the whole team are very, very close and involved with teams that are massively bringing in narcotics, including Pat Boone's airstrip down the Nugan Bank in Australia and Daniel Ludwig, the richest man in America, who has many things, including an airstrip down in Australia with Pat Boone, Mr. Kling, with the narcotics traffic. So she has these tapes. They said they won't bring them up at Mr. Pankow's trial because they're not relevant to the murder. No, they're not relevant to the murder, except the fact that she could have been murdered for having taped them. So they're not going to go into his background, and they're certainly relevant. Then another story, what if, this is the question, what if Schlesinger feared, as head of the Defense Department, Secretary of Defense, that Nixon would order a military takeover? This is a article, also the Seymour Hersh article in the Atlantic Monthly, that made a second headline. What I said in my article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped, is they were planning a military takeover. That's exactly what they were planning at the time of the election in 1972, and to make Spiro Agnew president and to let the military take over. And when they pulled the tapes out with Watergate and the tapes that brought Richard Nixon out of office, there was Alexander Haig right in the front desk. Gerald Ford became the president. James McCord was on the military emergency team, and E. Howard Hunt had walkie-talkies and road maps of Washington in his desk. See, they had planned all that before Watergate, not because Richard Nixon was going crazy and silly in a hospital or that something new had developed. The takeover was planned, as I said, a long time earlier, and now they're admitting that there was this plan of takeover with the Marines in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And they wondered about the 82nd Airborne Division, if it should be brought into Washington. Well, Alex Butterfield was brought up from Australia by Alexander Haig. I've had this on back tapes and how they taped the president and moved him out. Just a quick mention of the Texas multimillionaire that was killed in Los Angeles. The Texas real estate developer became head of a major Hollywood TV syndication. He was killed in his Bel Air home. Henry Harrison Kyle, K-Y-L-E. 60 years old, was gunned down in Los Angeles last week. Head of the Four Star International Company, one of the people that formed the movie company, was Dick Powell, David Niven, Charles Boyer, and Ida Lupino. Ida Lupino worked with Errol Flynn, who was in the Gestapo, and David Niven, who passed away just a few days after this particular murder. He had a lingering illness and was dying at age 73 of a Lou Gehrig's disease. This fellow was gunned down. He was a self-made multimillionaire high up in the military, lived near Dallas, chairman of the Allied First National Bank of Mesquite, M-E-S-Q-U-I-T-E, lived in Texas and Kansas, went to Hollywood, Southern California in 1970. As soon as Ronald Reagan was in, Klaus Barbie begins his Bolivia cocaine escalation with Nixon as president, and the Texans move out to Hollywood to begin their shooting. An interesting background of this particular person, they haven't found yet who shot him. I doubt if they ever will. It'll probably be some crazy loner whose parents were divorced and he was in Vietnam and he didn't have a job and he left a diary on why he wanted to get the man. He likes to climb through windows in summer evenings and no mother, father, anyone will show up and they'll find him mentally incapacitated. And David Niven died the same week. Incidentally, regarding the Lou Gehrig's disease, a member of my family, or not related to me, actually my ex-husband's second wife now is dying of Lou Gehrig's disease. And the day her infirmity started was the day that she got that Gerald Ford swine flu vaccination. And she got sick after that and began to degenerate. Her legs degenerated, and she's having a long, lingering, miserable death and is on the brink of death now. But she walks right up. They're good patriots, my ex-husband and his new wife and a lot of other people in this country. They say, okay, shoot me one, Jerry. And a lot of people have Lou Gehrig's disease. Another famous person just died of it this week, a degenerative disease, with an interesting background. So David Niffen had that, and goodness knows if he went along with Gerald Ford's get your shots, what have you got to lose? Now, here's an interesting story from the Monterey Herald today. U.S. and Europe adopt a winemaking do's and don'ts. Don't. You see, you've got to read a lot of articles besides the obvious ones. But the thing that caught my eye on the top, it said dried blood powder traded off against hydrogen peroxide. The United States winemakers have agreed that they'll stop sending France and Europe, it doesn't say which country, this could be Germany or anywhere, Europe will stop sending wines laced with dry blood powder to the United States if Americans stop putting hydrogen peroxide to bubble the champagne. Well, yippee, let's have a toast tonight. Powdered milk is okay, and charred oak chips are okay, but the blood's got to stop. Do you suppose anyone from Germany had a disease out of a bottle or one of these things that they have in Atlanta, Georgia, where they experiment on germs, or Mr. Joseph Mengele's laboratory, the mad scientist, where they could create medications and send liquor and wine to three cities like San Francisco or New York or down in the South and give a little touch of AIDS to people, a little dried blood, if you can get it through transfusions of other people's blood. So dry blood is out, so maybe they'll find a cure for AIDS next year when the wine stops coming over. In the meanwhile, the inside of the people must have turned white, hydrogen peroxide. That's not going to be in their champagne. So that's a fair deal, don't you think? Another story this week, just this week, Italian neo-fascist movement celebrates the memory of Mussolini. Can you believe it? Just like Ronald Reagan resurrects from the governor of California to 8 years here and then goes on to Washington, and Richard Nixon is floating around as a multimillionaire and got elected after Watergate. They're celebrating Mussolini now and revering him as a hero. Fiat had indicted in faking brands. I mentioned the Agnelli family just a few weeks ago and the daughter that was indicted for some small amount of money, like $700, and I figured there should have been a few more, six more dashes after it in the millions. Fiat auto magnate Giovanni and Umbretti Agnelli, and the reason I mention them is their links to Permandex and the assassination teams that were behind and funded the murder of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. They've been indicted in Italy of selling imported cars in Italy under false brand names. Giovanni, 62, chairman of Fiat Auto Empire and the richest man in Italy, and Umberto, 49, vice chairman, face 1 year in jail. My goodness, what is this world coming to? I can't absolutely believe it. It's amazing. Now, a crisis going on to John DeLorean soon, and this is a big crisis because a year ago tonight I was talking about this subject. This comes out of Sunday Telegraph, July 3rd, 1983, and David Emery sent this to me, and the researchers up in the Bay Area that have gotten a lot of material in the Vatican, I should update it. Ted Rubenstein and David are right on top of it, and we should update it. But this is a good one. And just to show you the style of the paper by Robert Tyerman in London and Leslie Child, C-H-I-L-D, in Rome, I'll read you a few sentences because to paraphrase it, which I usually do, is cruel. Overshadowing the inquest into the death of Italian banker Roberto Calvi last week is the whole financial position of the Vatican itself. Let me just stop and say now, as I read this story with you, visualize John DeLorean, who's close to Cardinal Cook at the Vatican in New York City at the St. Patrick's Cathedral, close to the Catholic Church with his Italian wife also, and working with Claus Barbie, who works with Della Chae down in Bolivia, and with the Licio Gelli and the P2 and the Masonic Lodge and the Vatican money. Visualize now that Claus Barbie's locked up and the DeLorean money is sitting in Claus Barbie's bank in Zurich, Switzerland, a good hunk of it. And then visualize the Vatican, how they feel because of their role. Remember, they helped Claus Barbie get down to Bolivia and had safe houses for him and the other Nazis. Now we get back to Roberto Calvi. Overshadowing the inquest is the problem of the whole financial position of the Vatican itself. Day by day, it is more entangled in this extraordinary story. The inquest into Calvi raised more questions. How much of a financial scandal and loss, how much can the Vatican stand? And it says that they exhumed the body of Roberta Calvi, and now they have an open verdict that it wasn't a clear-cut suicide at all. Amazing and dramatic as the story was of the Freemasonry with fraud and drugs and corruption, and I add murder, and plenty more, which they didn't put in the word murder, but that's all over the place. And there was always hovering in the background the story that could make even Calvi's death look like a Women's Institute tea party. You get that one? Was the collapse of Calvi's Banco Ambrosiano going to rock the Vatican after all? What were the links between the Banco Ambrosiano, which is the largest bank in Italy, and the Vatican, which is the largest church in the world, and their own Institute for Religious Works? They're looking into $840 million, which is 16. You double that two times 840 times that $1,680 million or $2.4 billion. What happened to it? The man who knows the most is sealed, firmly sealed within the recesses of Vatican City. Somebody wrote to me that Paul Marcinkus had been in the United States, but if he did, he had to slide right back and take care of the remaining money in the bank. He's 56 and he's from Chicago, and that is the link to the organized crime, to the Capone gang, to Hollywood, to the Ronald Reagan, Republican, GOP, Michelson donor, the mafia out of Chicago. And he has been over in that bank ever since Richard Nixon became president in 1969, right tight in the Vatican Bank. It says the commission was supposed to come out with a report Friday, but they can't do it. There's no way they can do it. This report will involve 88 banks, and I mentioned this before, that are claiming collectively they owed over $500 million, and they can't come up with it. The Vatican, these banks had lent it to Ambrosiano, and the Vatican Bank had written letters of patronage for this money. They are trying to get their money back through the Italian courts. Nobody is helping them, and the Holy See is now feeling very badly about this. The estimates of the Vatican's bank, it's worth approximately $14 billion with property and real estate, but the running costs are high. You know, they have to buy grocery at the same price that we buy it, and so forth, and they're cleaning and dry cleaning and water, soap, and electricity. I don't think they may get a tax deduction, but the cost of gasoline and cars and transportation and furs and ermines and diamonds and postage, well, their postage is free. They've got their own post office. But if they send it from anywhere else, I guess they pay their postage. They tried to collect Peter's pence this June to collect money. This is the time when they asked the Catholics all over the world to bail them out. 3,000 employees of the Vatican, you may not know or may know, they went on strike for wages because they were broke and can't take home money. And they were told there was no more money in the kitty. Most of the money, well, I shouldn't say on the air. Okay, I'll say it. It seems with the scandals, I won't. It's not nice. The Holy See's budget is controlled by the Prefecture for Economic Affairs, and it says the IOR, which is the Vatican Bank, is running out of cash. It's tied to this scandal in Marcinkus, who was appointed the head of the bank in 1969 by Pope Paul VI, has been handling all the Vatican money. Now, Pope Paul VI is part, he's Mr. Montini, the Milan Mafia, and I was rereading the Gemstone file this week that Bruce Roberts wrote, and it's all about the Montini, the Milan Mafia, Aristotle Onassis, Michael Sindona, and the Watergate people around Richard Nixon. This article comes from the Sunday Telegraph. The 88 banks want $500 million. They're yelling for it. No report has come in. Marcinkus is laying low. The Vatican is losing $20 million a year. They lost $40 million in 1983 with a deficit, and they're running scared. Well, they do have their problems, you would agree, and they asked for it, so they're getting it. And those are some of the newspaper articles that are of interest to that story. And then when the second half of the program begins, the second half of this broadcast, we'll go into John DeLorean and Klaus Barbie and Henry Kissinger to get an overview, and then some of the current articles that we have in the news. And in the meantime, we'll take a 1-minute break.